Chapter 34, Kredaki. He hadn't realized the ship looked this bad. Kredaki had checked the status of every damaged engine and instrument. As repairs were made, he or Takata Jim had discreetly triple-checked. Most of the damage that could be fixed had been. But as ship's master, he was the one who also had to deal with the intangibles. Someone had to pay attention to aesthetics, no matter how low their priority. And however successful the functional repairs were, Streaker was no longer beautiful. This was his first trip outside in person. He wore a breather and swam above the scarred hull, getting an overview. The stasis flanges and the main gravity drives would work. He had Takata Jim's and Emerson Denite's word on that, and had checked himself. One rocketry impeller had been destroyed by an antimatter beam at Morgran. The remaining tube was serviceable. But though the hull was secure and strong, it was not the delight to the eye it had once been. The outer skin was seared in two places where beams had penetrated the shields to blister the skin. Brukita had told him that there was even one small area where the metal had been changed from one alloy to another. The structural integrity of the ship was intact, but it meant that someone had come awfully close to them with a probability distorter. It was disturbing to think that that piece of Streaker had been swapped with another similar but slightly different ship, containing similar but slightly different fugitives, in some hypothetical parallel universe. According to library records, no one had ever learned to control cross-universe distorters well enough to use them as anything but weapons, though it was rumored that some of the ancient species that outgrew galactic civilization from time to time discovered the secret and used it to leave this reality by a side door. The concept of endless parallel universes was one known by dolphins since long before humans learned fire. It was integral to the whale dream. The great cetaceans moaned complacently of a world that was endlessly mutable. In becoming tool users, Amicus dolphins lost this grand indifference. Now they understood the whale's philosophy little better than did men. A tame version of the probability distorter was one of the dozen ways the galactics knew to cheat the speed of light, but cautious species avoided it. Ships disappeared using probability drives. Kredaki imagined coming out of FTL to find a convention of streakers, all from different universes, all captained by slightly altered versions of himself. The whales might be able to be philosophically complacent about a situation like that. He wasn't so sure of himself. Besides, the whales, for all their philosophical genius, were imbeciles on levels dealing with spaceships and machines. They wouldn't recognize a fleet of ships any better than a dog knew its reflection in the water. Less than 2 months ago, Kredaki had faced a derelict fleet of ships the size of moons, as old as middle-aged stars. He had lost a dozen good fen there, and had been fleeing fleets of ships ever since. There were times when he wished he could be animal-blind to some things, as were the whales, or as philosophical. Kredaki swam up to a ridge overlooking the ship. Bright heliarch lamps cast long shadows in the clear, euphotic water. The crews below were finishing installing the booty Soessi had found at the Thenanin wreck. There remained only clearing the landing legs for movement. Hikahi had left just hours ago with a picked crew and the ship's skiff. Kredaki wished he could have spared more to go help Soessi, but Streaker was already well below minimum complement. He still saw no alternative to Thomas Orley's plan. Metz and Takata Jim had been unable to come up with anything short of outright surrender to the winner of the battle overhead, and that was one thing Kredaki could never permit, not while there was any chance at all. Passive sensors showed the fight in space peaking in fury. Within days, it might climax, and the last opportunity for an escape in confusion and disguise would be upon them. I hope Tom arrived safely and his experiment is successful. The water echoed with the low grumbling of engines being tested. Kradaki had calculated the acceptable noise levels himself. There were so many forms of leakage. Neutrinos from the power plant, gravitonics from the stasis screen, psi from everyone aboard. Sound was the least of his worries. As he swam, Kradaki heard something above him. He turned his attention surfaceward. A solitary neofin drifted near the detector buoys, working on them with harness manipulators. Kradaki moved closer. Is there a problem here to bother duty's patterns? He recognized the giant Stenos Cathajan. The bosun started. His eyes widened, and momentarily, Kradaki could see the whites around the flat, boat-like pupils. Cathajan recovered quickly. His mouth opened in a grin. Noise buzz bothered neutrino listener. She could not hear the battle raging. Now she tells me static has fled. I'll to my duty, now be leaving. This was serious business. It was vital that Streaker's Bridge know what was going on in the sky and be able to hear news of Thomas Orley's mission. Takata Jim should have detailed someone else to do the job. The buoys were the responsibility of the bridge crew. Still, with Hikahi and Tisht gone, and most of the elite bridge crew with them, perhaps Cathajan was the only petty officer who could be spared. Good as jumping, big wave rider. Now hurry back to those who await you. Cathajan nodded, his harness arms folded back. Without another word, he blew a small cloud of bubbles and dove toward the bright opening of Streaker's lock. Kradaki watched the giant go. Superficially, at least, Cathajan appeared to have reacted more resiliently than many of the other Fen to Streaker's predicament. Indeed, he had seemed even to relish the fighting retreat for Morgran, and manned his gun battery with fierce enthusiasm. He was an efficient non-com. Then why do my hackles rise whenever I'm near him? Is he another of Metz's sports? I must insist Dr. Metz stop stalling and show me his records. If necessary, I'll override the man's door locks. Protocol be damned. Cathajan had become Lieutenant Takata Jim's constant companion. Together with Metz, the three were the chief opponents to Tom Orley's plan. There was still bad bile over it. Takata Jim had become more taciturn than ever. The vice-captain was becoming a real problem. Kradaki felt compassion for the lieutenant. It was not his fault. This test cruise had become a crucible. But pity would not prevent Kradaki from promoting Hikahi over his head as soon as the crew was reunited. Takata Jim was likely aware of what was coming and of the report the captain had to write on each of his officers for the uplift center. Takata Jim's right to have special bonus offspring might be in jeopardy. Kradaki could imagine how the vice-captain felt. There were times when even he felt oppressed by the towering invasiveness of uplift, when he almost wanted to squawk in primal, "Who gave you the right?" And the sweet hypnosis of the whale dream would call to him to return to the embrace of the old gods. The moment always passed, and he recalled that there was nothing in the universe he wanted more than to command a starship, to collect tapes of the songs of space, and to explore the currents between the stars. A school of native fish swam past. They looked a little like mullet, kitch mullet, in garish metal flake scales. He felt a sudden urge to give chase, to call his hard-working crew out to join him in a hunt. He envisioned his stolid engineers and techs dropping their harnesses to join the squealing pack, nimbly driving the poor creatures, catching them in mid-air as panic drove them leaping above the surface. Even if a few Fen got carried away and swallowed some metal, it would be worth it for morale. All the rains of spring, and then one secret evening, riding waves, the moon. It was a haiku of regret. There was no time for hunt games, not while they themselves were quarry. His harness chime announced that he had only 30 minutes' air left. He shook himself. If his meditation had gone any deeper, Nukapai might have come. The chimerical goddess would have teased him. Her gentle voice would have reminded him of Hikahi's absence. The observation buoys bobbed nearby, tethered by slender strands to the seabed below. He swam closer to the smooth red and white ovoid Katha John had worked on, and noticed that the access plate had been left ajar. Great Aki's head bobbed as he cast narrowly focused sound. The odd geometry of the buoy and guy wires was mildly disturbing. His sonar speak receiver buzzed. An amplified voice came to him over the neural patch line. "Captain, this is Takata Jim. We've just finished testing the impellers and the stasis generators. They're working up to your new specs. Also, Suesi called to say that the Trojan Seahorse is coming along. Hikahi has arrived there and sends greetings." "Good." Great Enki sent the words directly along the neural link. "Has there been anything from Orly?" "No, sir, and it's getting late. Are you sure you want to go with this plan of his? What if he can't get a Psi Bomb message back to us?" "We have already discussed the contingencies." "And we're still going to move the ship. I do think that we ought to talk it over one more time." Great Aki felt a wave of irritation. "We'll not discuss policy over an open channel, Pod Second, and it's already decided. I'll be back shortly. Meanwhile, search for loose ends to bite off. We must be ready when Tom calls." "Aye, sir." Takata Jim didn't sound at all apologetic as he switched off. Great Aki had lost count of the number of times he had been questioned about this plan. If they lacked faith because he was only a dolphin, they would have noted that the original idea was Thomas Orley's. Besides, he, Great Aki, was captain. He was the one saddled with saving their lives and honor. When he had served aboard the survey vessel James Cook, he had never witnessed its human master, Captain Alvarez, questioned this way. He slashed his tail through the water until his temper cooled. He counted until the calming patterns of Kenink settled over him. "Let it go," he decided. The majority of the crew did not question, and the rest obeyed their instructions. For an experimental crew under immense pressure, that would have to do. "Where there is mind, there is always solution," Kenink taught. All problems contained the elements of their answer. He commanded his manipulator arms to reach out and grab the access panel to the buoy. If the buoy was in good order, he could find a way to praise Takata Jim. There would be a key to reach the lieutenant to pull him back into the ship's community and break his vicious cycle of isolation. Where there is mind. It would only take a few minutes to find out if it was in working order. Great Aki plugged an extension from his neural socket into the buoy's computer. He commanded the machine to report its status. A brilliant arc of electric discharge flashed in front of him. Great Aki screamed as the shock blew out the motors of his harness and seared the skin around his neural tap. A penetrator bolt! Great Aki realized in stunned rigidity. How? He felt it all in slow motion. The current fought with the protective diodes of his nerve amplifier. The main circuit breaker threw, but the insulation almost immediately buckled under backlash. Paralyzed, Great Aki seemed to hear a voice in the pulsing, battling fields, a voice taunting him. Where there is mind is also deception. Deception is, there is. In a body-arching squeal of agony, Kradeki screamed one undisciplined cry in primal, the first of his adult life. Then he rolled belly up to drift in a blackness deeper than night.